It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And you probably read about it on social media. Somebody's been texting you. Somebody's been calling you about proposed changes for flounder and speckled trout. We've talked about it on the show quite a few times, Mike, yep. And it looks like the cement is starting to dry a little bit on this. And joining us here in just a few minutes, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, will be on, and we'll break it down. We'll go in depth, the flounder proposal, the speckled trout proposal, and what it could look like fishing for those two signature inshore species.
Yeah, things are going to change.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
So, but we'll go through. It doesn't mean you're going to like it or not like it, but we'll get out of the rumor mill and get into right. The real stuff.
Well, some people are going to like it. Some people are not going to like it.
So we'll do that. He's going to join us here shortly. So before Scott comes rolling in and we take this whole show fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is good. You know, we're going to be doing that for the next 4 months anyway. although we got planting and summer plantings.
That's
and,
right.
Yeah, habitat improvement. Let's do a little turkey report.
Sean, I'll tell you, I had a tough week. I did get to go Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Yeah.
My grandson's out of school for
remember, the weather was
break.
Good. Weather was good.
All the weather was perfect. I've been complaining.
Yeah.
I hadn't had a good year. One thing was the weather's been so bad.
But I think you had a pretty good run there.
Oh, man, the weather was perfect. I mean, just couldn't be any better. But undoubtedly, that's not my problem. I didn't kill anything. Dylan didn't kill anything.
Did y'all hear some goblin birds?
Oh, we heard gobbling every morning, and Monday morning we got on three different turkeys gobbling. We got on one, and he flew down and started going the other way, and we went and got on him a little bit closer, and he steadily went the other way, and he just went on. And then we went down the road and got on another turkey gobbling and got on him. He gobbled a few times kind of close, and then he went on the other way, and I heard him gobble for at least a mile. I mean, well, it was actually two of them, and they gobbled for a mile and then going away from me. And then we went on down the road and got on another one gobbling. And got up right up on him, and he went the other way, too.
Now, don't they realize it's late April, and they're supposed to come running and jump in your lap?
Yeah, because the hens are leaving them.
Yeah,
for
although,
sure.
Although, I'll show you some pictures here in a little bit. I've got groups of four or five hens together.
Yeah.
Grouped up, and they're it's 9 o'clock in the morning, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 11 o'clock in the day, they're out feeding around.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of hens by themselves.
And see, I'm seeing them grouped together.
Yeah, I don't understand that, but I don't know what the deal is. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, they were all the same way. Got on goblin birds, and they'd answer me, and then they'd steadily be going away from me.
That sounds like the beginning of season.
Yeah.
That sounds like what you're talking about, in mid-March.
I had two turkeys Wednesday, that got on there. I mean, they started gobbling, and I thought they was coming at me, and they kind of quartered coming towards me a little bit, but it was almost like they were running and gobbling. I mean, they were just coming and coming and coming. They just went right on by me gobbling and just went right on out of hearing gobbling. What's that all about? I mean, it's like they on a mission to go somewhere, and they're going a long ways away.
You got to figure out where they want to go.
But they're all going in different directions, so I don't know. I can't figure it out. I mean, it's like scratching my head. I don't know. But anyway.
Hopefully we'll have some better reports here by the time we're shutting it down. I think on Tuesday's the last day.
Yeah, Tuesday's the last day. I'm heading up when we get through here today.
And all right.
I'm going to give it my last shot, I believe.
Me too. Going to get after it as well. All right, coming back, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, changes to flounder, changes to trout, and what that's going to look like going forward. We do that next. Right. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. And as we mentioned, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joins us now. And lots to talk about. Scott, thanks for your time.
Hey, good morning, guys. Glad to be here.
And how you doing, Scott?
Doing great.
Good to have you here. And let's talk about something that I think you first came on with us a
over a month, maybe 2 months ago, and started talking about this in the preliminary fashion of some proposed ideas for proposals for changes for flounder and speckled trout. And you had a series of meetings that were open to the public for people to come express their opinion on that. How did those go, by the way? How was that process?
The meetings went great. The people that came to the meetings were very engaged, asked great questions, and provided great feedback. And it resulted in about 100 emails in response to the meetings about what different members of the public, you know, feel would work and what works for them and why. And so really it was very well received and very few negative comments. Most people realized there were some concerns with both of these species of fish, and they appreciated the fact that we were going, reaching out to them and showing them, here's what we're seeing, here are our thoughts, and what are your thoughts. So I think it went as well as it could.
I want to get into what that led to, and also let's educate people too how this process works. We're going to get into these recommendations to the advisory board, but this is a process where marine resources y'all recommend to the up in Montgomery, right? The advisory board, and then kind of walk us through that process, how limits and seasons and those things are changed or adapted.
Sure, the advisory board is made up of 11 members that are made up from the congressional districts around the state, and they meet initially at the first of the year in Montgomery, and then they'll have follow-up meetings throughout the year in different locations in the state. Our next one is May 4th at the Lodge at Gulf State Park, and at 9 o'clock, if people would like to attend. These are appointed individuals to help give some oversight into the regulation process through DCNR, and to also kind of bring it to light so that there's not this, quote, secret meetings going on or things like that. These are public meetings. So we present changes to them. They ask questions. They get feedback from their constituents, and then they vote on those.
Okay.
Now, bag and size limits are not required to go through that process. We generally can make those without going through that, but for these species, these are so important to the people of Alabama, we just felt that there needed to be a lot of awareness about what's going on.
Well, let's talk about what's going on, and we'll break it down. The two species we're talking about, just joining us, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, and these recommended changes. First of all, let's start on the flounder front. I think, if anything, you can get a pretty good consensus from I'm sure in the commercial world, but from recreational anglers like Mike and I, that flounder are in trouble. Something is going on. I say in trouble. They've been harder to catch. How about that? And harder to gig.
For the last 7-8 years.
Seven, eight years. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things. So how do you propose addressing flounder? What changes are recommended here?
It's a multi-pronged approach because we do have a commercial and recreational sectors. So we're going to increase the minimum size limit so that to 14 inches. It's currently at 12, and that allows a lot more of those females that are carrying eggs and things to have more than 1 year to produce eggs. So that's there's a benefit to that. It does make it a little harder sometimes to find those fish. We're reducing the bag limit for the recreation anglers from 10 fish down to 5 fish. Currently, very few people are ever getting to those 5 fish anyway, but it does prevent those times when, especially during Jubilee periods and things, where it'll help reduce that harvest. And then we're adding a trip limit to the commercial anglers. We have not had that in the past. We've made a recommendation of 30 per person or 30 per boat for the commercial anglers. And so that's new. But that's about an average night for some of these commercial fishermen, and it eliminates the spikes in harvest where sometimes when those fish are in a little bit different state where they're easier to catch, such as Jubilee months when those low oxygen levels hit, it really keeps people from hammering them during that time period. And then we're also going to make a recommendation for the closure of the month of November to commercial and recreational anglers. And what that will do is allow those females to make that move offshore. That's where they go to spawn. And November is the time period that they do that. So a lot of agreement through the commercial and recreational communities that if you allow those fish to escape in the month of November, that we should see some good returns on that.
So the benefit of the month of November closure is what, the survivability of females? I mean, that's
correct. The males and females go offshore. Males go out within their first year. Their age zeros, as we call them, are one-year-old fish, and they generally don't come back. But the females do. So if you allow them that opportunity to go ahead and make their way offshore, that's one of our bigger harvest months, and so it reduces the effort on them for that month and allows them more to make it offshore and spawn.
So November closed. What about recreational in November? Same thing?
Yes, it would apply to both commercial.
No retention. No retention of flounder in November.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, one thing, you know, this is something that I don't know whether this has anything to do with it or not, but I mean, I've talked to some other people about it. Is there anything to do with maybe the snapper? There's so many snapper out there right now that they're eating the baby flounder. Is that, could that possibly be part of it?
We've had some discussion that has come up in some, we don't have a real good way to determine yes or no, but those babies do make their way back in. But we have seen some anecdotal evidence from some of our people who dive offshore for them that they have seen a fair abundance of flounder around the artificial reefs. So they are making their way out there. They are spawning. They are making their way back in. So it's that recruitment back inshore. There are so many other predators, you know, lionfish and these that are, you know, just voracious eaters. So any species that feeds on juvenile species could impact it, but you know, the fisheries world, it's a numbers game. You try and get as many babies in the system to get as many to survive.
Yeah, I guess there's a side note there just to talk about, people hadn't thought about it, because you picture, even though flounder can be caught all over, you picture them as a fish of the marsh and the bay and, you know, the bayous and things like that. But those flounder first have to come from offshore to come back inshore. So saying, hey, there's a good marsh and a good nursery area, which I want to get into in a little bit, that's secondary, right, to some hypersaline marine environment offshore.
Sure. You know, they start there, and they actually swim upright, have eyes on both sides of their head like any other fish, and then they make their way back inshore. They find an area where they're comfortable, and then that eye migrates over. It's an amazing process, and then they spend juvenile time in the marsh.
Okay, so they have got to make it to that marsh before that marsh can protect the juvenile fish. So
that's,
you think,
correct.
The problem is in just there's not enough numbers in the system to run the gauntlet between offshore and the marsh, and that's why you have to get more new
that's
ones?
That's correct. Okay. In the stock assessment, they actually kind of looked at how many 6-inch fish are in the system, and that was an easier measurement and easier group to monitor. So if you can increase that level, then that means you should increase your harvestable number of fish down the road.
What about supplemental? I know y'all have worked with programs here and doing the putting fish in the system. Where's that stand now with growing flounder and putting them in?
We are finalizing some of the tank installation at our Mariculture Center over in Gulf Shores, the Claude Petit Mariculture Center. So we have about 40 plus brood stock that are acclimating to our system, and so we had hoped that sometime in 2020 we're going to release 50 to 60,000 babies into the protected marsh areas.
What size is that? What you're calling a baby? What size flounder is that?
I believe they're probably going to be around 1 inch. You can raise them to a larger size, but then it becomes a little bit cost prohibitive, and space gets to be an issue. So there's this fine line between the bang for the buck and how many fish you can get out there and at what cost.
So if you're just joining us, talking to Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, proposed changes for flounder. We'll get to speckled trout here after the break. But on this flounder front, I guess this is kind of maybe a nerdy biology question, but I think about it. You're talking about flooding the system, making sure there are more possible flounder, baby flounder, to recruit into the system. Because I think about it in, like, let's get back on land here for a second. And for example, quail, right? Quail bird. If you can flood a block of land with quail, but if there's not habitat component, you do the same thing with wild turkey. Let's talk about that. You could flood that habitat with young poults or young quail chicks. If habitat components aren't there that they need for, you know, nest laying and brood rearing and all those things, if you don't have those components, you can flood all the young ones in there. It still doesn't net you out that many new quail or turkeys, right? Because the habitat wasn't there. So is there anything analogous to that in this flounder situation?
Well, it's you have to have healthy habitat for so many species here in coastal Alabama. So there is a concern that we have lost some habitat over the years. It's fairly stable right now, and we do think it's more of a recruitment issue to this point. Some other states are having some serious habitat loss. So you know, Louisiana with the erosion, you know, it's kind of a different challenge over there than what we have here. But I think our habitat is fairly stable, and we're doing some things, you know, some environmental groups and people as individuals are doing things nowadays that are more environmentally friendly and are doing a better job of maintaining our current environmental concerns.
Okay, that kind of, because I mean, my worry would be, let's say you flood the system with these juvenile flounder, whether you're doing artificially from a stocking or you know, with November giving them a break, there's more eggs laid, more coming back inshore. There is a density for any given square foot of marsh, right? That's suitable habitat. Once you fill it up,
we're there. We think that our environment and our habitat can support some more.
All right, good. Well, you're answering the question there,
Scott. How long does it take to get to a 14-inch flounder? How old is a 14-inch flounder?
If I remember correctly, that's about a 2-year-old fish. We have year zeros and then ones and then twos. And those are going to be mainly females. The males top out at about 13 inches. And, again, they go offshore and generally do not come back in. Males are very hard to find in the coastal waters, especially anything older than a zero or one. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe a female is about age two to be at a 14-inch fish.
All right. So so generally, just a rule of thumb with, I'm sure, like anything in nature, there's some exceptions, but the fish we're catching inshore are females.
Generally, yes.
All right. And as we run to the break here, remind folks once again, what does this look like? What would the proposed changes for flounder? What will be the limits, size, and creel?
So flounder is going to be 5 per person recreationally, commercially 30 per trip or 30 per boat. And then we'll also have a 14-inch minimum size length.
All right, coming right back, more with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Yes, we'll move on to speckled trout. It's like walking in a hen house and dropping a fistful of weasels here. Here we go.
Might take a little longer segment on this one.
Yeah, we'll have the extended remix coming up. Y'all stay close. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Mike Ward, Sean Sullivan. Remember, you can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Talking with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Actually, you can find them on Facebook too, right?
You can. Marine Resources, and then you can also go to our webpage, outdooralabama.com.
All right, good stuff. And I know that we're having a conversation, you and Mike, specifically there during the news break, about the age. There's some great questions. Can you ask that again, Mike, what you asked of Scott?
As far as what?
How old before they're 14 inches?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you know, how old is a flounder at 14 inches?
Sure, and those are going to be females that get to the 14-inch because the males generally top out at about 13 inches, and we don't see those in the system very long. They go offshore and then don't come back. But the females at about age two, they should be around that 14-inch size length.
So we don't know what happens to the male, huh? Where they go offshore and they die, or are they?
Yes, sir. They only live to be about the age of three. They're a very short-lived fish. I believe the females, it's more of about an 8-year-old fish is probably where they top out.
Okay, so that brings us to the next part that you and Mike were talking about during the news break. I think this is important, that as this idea, this proposal here for the changes for flounder, you're open to the idea that this may not be the issue affecting flounder populations, and if it didn't make a difference, it might change back.
That's true. I've asked our staff to look at the assessment models, and I said, what time period does it take for us to see if there's change? And so a 3-year time period, 3 full years of data gathering, we should be able to put everything back in the model and see what kind of recovery are we looking at. I mean, you'll see some changes in harvest rates and different things because you've made these changes to the size limits and you've created a trip limit for the commercial side. But you adjust the model for that, and you plug the data back in. And so we're hoping that in the 3-year mark, we review this,
and we see if we see these upward trends, which is what we hope. So that means things are working. If it's not, then we really have to see what is the impact to this fishery that we can't get our brain wrapped around. Is it environmental? Is it just climate change, which is a discussion that is a very difficult discussion to have, but water temperatures do change. And could change back, and it may make effects.
I know I'm on 18 tangents here, but there's always there's so many interesting parts of it. The water temperature thing. You and I have talked about this before. That like I know other fish species. Heck, you could say the same thing for land species with incubation temperatures and alligators. I know it makes for reptiles that the temperature of the water leads to more of one sex than another. Right.
That's correct. And flounder do that. They can. You know, the numbers of males and females are adjusted based on water temperature. So those are concerns. There's the water quality within the bay system here, low oxygen levels that we've seen on our oyster reefs, you know, so is that the bigger problem that really the fish are there? They're just not in the same places. There are lots of things to look at. I wish I had a crystal ball. It would make my job so much easier.
All right. I want to move to speckled trout now. And recommendation. So tell me, what is the recommendation you'll be making to the advisory board?
So from our public meetings, we received, tremendous feedback about the creation of a slot limit where, you create a size where you can keep the fish inside this size limit. And because a lot of people that really target trout on a regular basis are really doing that already. They've kind of imposed their own self-limit, and among charter fishermen and private anglers, there was big support for that. So we're looking at moving the minimum size limit up to 15 inches, which matches Mississippi and Florida. So it makes it a little easier for those people that fish on both of those borders to have a consistent bottom end. So 15-inch minimum total length, and then creating that slot with a maximum length of 22 inches. So you can keep that fish inside of there. But you're going to be allowed a trophy fish. If you catch one fish that's over that and you're like, I'm proud of this fish, I want to take it back, then that's fine. And we're reducing the bag limit, which you guys know I was struggling with. You know, do we really want to reduce the bag limit? We're going to reduce it to 6 per person. And believe it or not, we received a lot of very positive feedback on doing a bag limit reduction. I'm a little bit reluctant because of, what is the impact? And I want people to have a good day fishing. After some discussion with our staff and with the public, the return on those fish with those different regulation changes should be fairly quick. And again, within a 3-year period, we should really be able to determine with that fishery, is there some positive change? And could we release that bag limit back to a higher number? We felt 6 was a pretty reasonable number that would allow a pretty good catch for the day, but also help recover that stock a little bit faster.
Here's what a lot of people, I'm sure this has been brought up to you over all your discussions, is once you take the fish away from you from 10 to 6, that we're never going to get it back. It'll never go back. It's only going to go the other way. The next time it'll be from 6 to 4 to 3 to 2 to maybe not even having a season like the federal did with the snapper. That's what a lot of people are concerned with. Where it's totally different with you being with the state, you can make a decision real quick. Do we need to go up a little more, go back to 10? Fish are doing good now, and then 3 years after that, maybe they get a little bad, go back to 6 for a couple of years. I mean, you can adjust that real quick, where with the feds, you can't adjust. You're just talking to a brick wall when you're talking to the feds, but when you're talking to the state, you can have something done pretty quick, right?
You can, and we have, of course, the commissioner, Chris Blankenship, is the former director here, so he is very engaged and understands, and he understands my concerns. And so we've had some good discussions. We can make those changes from 1 year to the next. Of course, you don't want to make knee-jerk reactions. You need a little bit of time, and that's why we've set that 3-year mark to look at it. But very quickly, you can make that adjustment, and that's the advantage of a state-managed fishery. And I am here for the next 3 years, unless the commissioner decides that no longer supports my decision making. So I will be here to push for that. At the 3-year mark, we are reviewing these fisheries, and seeing what we can do.
Here's the other good thing about it. You fish, Chris fishes, all of y'all fish. So y'all understand where, now to keep going back to the feds, but we got to talk about that too because everybody got
it's a real part of this. Yeah.
Because the feds have got everything so messed up out in the Gulf that everybody's just so concerned about it that, you know, we're never going to be able to go fishing like we used to again. But all of y'all fish. Y'all like to fish. Y'all understand our situation around here. So you can react real quick. If things get good, you can go back up. If it gets worse, maybe we need to cut it back. But it's not something that is a lifelong thing like what the Fed's done to us, right?
That's correct. And I don't live in an ivory tower. I drive across that Dolphin Island Bridge a couple of days a week. I go to Gulf Shores a couple of days a week. I love talking with fishermen. I will answer the phone even at odd hours and have discussions with people. I want to see the boats out there. I want to see the public. I want to hear what they have to say because that's important to see, or if what we're seeing on the science side, does that correlate with what the angler is seeing? And so I'm here, I see the people, and I hear the people, and we have the decision-making ability between the commissioner and my staff. So we work for the citizens of Alabama. We truly believe that's our role is to make things better for the citizens of Alabama.
And I've known you long enough that I know that's what's in your heart.
That's right.
And so with that being said, though, and let me point out that maybe in this loyal opposition and in definitely friendly and constructive comments I'm going to make here, they're not for the benefit of just expressing this. And maybe I express the ideas of people listening out there. Maybe I represent some of those people. So, I mean, some of my concerns with this, first of all, let's just start with the and I want to go back for a second and say, do we have a good benchmark? Do you feel like we have a good benchmark going into this 3 years to know that where we sit now, so we have a solid comparison in 3 years? Is the science good there for the benchmark?
I think so.
Okay.
And to use the trout as an example, one of our biggest concerns there is the amount of fishing effort. You know, you and I talked about that it's been a tenfold increase from the mid-90s to the mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have so many targeted trips, so we can monitor that. Do we really see that much more of an increase in angler effort? If that stays fairly consistent, then these changes should show an effect relatively quick. The concern is if angler effort keeps increasing, then that's difficult to manage.
Well, I think it's dependent on a couple of things. Obviously, economy drives it. Offshore seasons, in other words, snapper. The more liberal snapper gets, I think the less pressure there is on speckled trout in those given months where they overlay. I would also point out that we have an issue. It's not as much in the fishing world as it is in the hunting world, but we have a decline in people that recreate in the outdoors. I know it doesn't seem like it here at the boat launches, but you look nationally, you look at some of the numbers, license sales for hunting licenses are definitely down, even here in Alabama. I don't know how it looks on the fishing side.
We're fairly consistent on the fishing side, but on the hunting side, it is disappointing.
It's trouble.
Our youth are not growing up and participating in those activities.
And that's, you know, while I would love to have the boat ramp to myself and the woods to myself, I realize the long-term health of what we all love so much, we need to do a better recruitment. All right, so my issues here, looking through speckled trout, I just want to kind of go through these one by one. 15-inch limit raise, I got no issue there. And you said lines up with Florida and Mississippi. Heck, I could have gone for 16 inches if that lets more fish in the system. Also, if you remember our conversations in the past, I was somewhat I'm a personal proponent of a slot limit, turning back big fish. And I have this theory that the big fish are more – they're proven – breeders and they do a better job. Although, you know what, I come to try to challenge my own ideas. Is the value of 1 6-pound trout more than 3 19 19 inch fish? I mean, hey, the 19 inch fish,
6 to 1, that fish underneath 15 inches compared to that over the 22 to about a 24 inch fish is about 6 times the egg carrying capacity.
Okay so that big fish to that smaller fish, although I think that obviously By just looking at this, the closer you get to that 20, 21, 22-inch size, then a few of those can count for as much as, you know, I mean, a couple of those 19- or 20-inch fish, 22-inch fish, could be as good as a 6-pound female.
Correct.
Okay. So, I mean, I see that, and I'm personally, I've been one, you know, that turns back big fish. But I see real issues here on this 22-inch top end of the slot. Now, you did say, and I want to reiterate here, you're allowing for a trophy fish and people to keep that, and that's good.
Per person.
People can keep that trophy fish. They can put it on the wall. They can ride it around. They can enter it in a tournament. I do see a problem for creel tournaments here. Creel, mm-hmm. Where you got your best three or best five trout. I see that issue in tournaments. But I also see, and this is very specific, to certain fishing styles, and I, not going to give any big secret, but those of us that fish the beaches, croaker fish the beaches in South Mobile County and South Baldwin County, that kind of fishing lends itself to a 21, 22, 23-inch trout, and quite often, on certain days, now certain days there'll be plenty of 18s and 19s mixed in there, but some days they're all 22s, that are in those schools. You start, hamstringing because of the way somebody fishes, the fact that they won't maybe even be able to keep six fish. You see what I'm saying? Where the person in the marsh is going to have no problem.
Yes, because the fishing is different in different areas and different times of the year. So there are going to be those times where you're not going to get to that size fish. Sometimes, like you said, you won't get down to that size.
That's what I'm
fish
saying. Yeah, beach fishing. I'm just going to tell, I mean, not that I know anything, but croaker fishing on the beach in May, June, and early July. I mean, there's a chance that you can be into fish. They're all going to be 22s.
That's correct. And that's why, we discussed, Florida is, and I think Mississippi both are 20-inch fish. And I said, well, I think we see a reasonable number of those, a little bit bigger than that, with the other measurement tools we're implementing, that I would like to keep some bigger fish, let people keep some bigger fish and get to those 22s, because there are those times when that's what you're going to get. I had a person call and said, today I caught one fish less than 22 inches, and mm-hmm. they had turned them all back. They were just fishing, but there are those concerns, and we understand that it's so when we try to look at it, it's the big picture. What are the best changes to receive the maximum benefit?
Just joining us, talking to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Let's do this. Let's run to the break, and then we'll come back. I have quite a few more questions on the speckled trout front.
For Scott.
And we'll continue that discussion as well. And we'd love to hear from you on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. You can drop us a line there anytime. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. We continue our conversation with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Talk about some proposed changes for some backyard favorites, flounder and speckled trout. We're not even talking about some species. I think you talk about, I don't know, Scott, if you wanted to represent what inshore fishing means along the northern Gulf Coast. I know some places would argue redfish higher, but if I had to pick two, dang, speckled trout and flounder, pretty much the
absolutely
top two.
Well, we have the Alabama flounder, redfish, and trout. They are three critical species. I think we're about to start throwing triple tail in there. That's a whole other conversation for another day. It's about those chasing those blackfish.
Yeah, and that one, I guess it's more like the flounder. I mean, I would argue the blackfish are part of even though they're an inshore species, they're also kind of a pelagic species, and they can migrate different areas, and what happens over there may affect us back here. That's a little different when we talk about speckled trout, right? I mean, we're talking about a homebody.
Yes, they are here. They are resident fish. They're born here, stay here, and get caught here.
All right, and as we talk about these changes, we went through this, the raising the minimum size from 14 to 15. I don't think you're going to get, like you said, not many people bothered by that. Heck, I'd say 16. I was bothered
on
by the top
trout
end. Yeah, on speckled trout. I was bothered by the top end. I still, because I can see some scenarios where I think that 22-inch top end of the slot is going to be tough on people. I know you said you can keep one trophy fish. But a lot of times it's, a series of fish. It might be your six fish are all 23 inches.
That was a concern that we looked at. And again, why I wanted to get to that 22, where some other states are at 20, because I did feel that was an issue.
recognizes that is a concern. Of course, maybe limited to you few guys that are excellent fishermen. Not everybody out there fishes to the same expertise that you might. But
well, listen, I don't do it every day. There's just certain times of the year, certain patterns I'm fishing trout on. You know, that's when you get those bigger fish. Yeah, believe me, I go a lot of days that we don't put a 22-inch fish in the boat. And trust me, there's just this golden period starting in a couple weeks here through, let's say, at least mid-June where that happens and on into July. Okay, let's talk about the creel limit. Let's talk about the moving from 10 to 6 for speckled trout. Is that just a straight numbers game, Scott? Why'd you decide on that?
It is a numbers game. We look at what... how the removal of those fish affect the return and the number of people participating in that fishery, and probably in that fishery in particular, the number of targeted trips, the number of anglers that are out there hunting for the speckled trout is a concern. So if we kind of put that number in check a little bit, that recovery should happen a little bit faster, stabilize the fishery in bad shape. It needs some stabilization. So we should see a return fairly quick, and since the commissioner and I are the decision makers for that, we can make that adjustment back pretty quickly. And again, I'm instituting a 3-year review no matter what, but we will look at the numbers every year to kind of see if we can gauge where we're headed with that fishery.
Yeah, you've made me think about this stuff enough over the years. I'm going to turn around and ask you a question you educated me on. So how many people achieve 10? Fish of the limit? You know, I mean, because you could say, oh, we're changing this, and people would assume that every angler on every day achieves a 10 fish limit, so therefore by reducing by 4, you add those to the pot. But there may be a lot of days that people aren't catching 10 keepers.
That's correct. Actually, the data shows that on speckled trout, we're at about 4.5 fish per angler is really what the data has shown. But we only target in our surveys, the people going to public access places and marinas. So there's a lot of private sector folks that are out there. And so we have to account for that. And a lot of them are doing a little bit better than that. So that 6 fish limit probably puts it at about the average. Now, I know fishermen that get 10. I don't care if it's raining, snowing, it's iced over out right there. They're going to get 10 fish. I don't know how they do it. But the average is 4.5 fish.
Yeah, I want to bring up too an elephant in the room because I don't dodge these things, and I believe me, my phone's been ringing and my email's been popping. That this was pushed by this reduction in limits was pushed by charter anglers, and I mean, y'all know, no big question. A couple of these guys are good friends of mine. One of them, pretty famous around here, is one of my best friends, and he's put in his own limits on his boat. But people are saying that, hey, the charter anglers have pushed for all this to heck with everybody else because they want to be able to tell their charters, y'all got a limit. All right, we're done.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not into adjusting people's business models, but we do have to take into account the amount of effort from our charter fleet. We sell about 260 what we call six-pack licenses, those 6 and under passengers. Now, not all of those are fishing on a regular basis, but we do have some folks fish pretty regular, so there is an impact. So, you know, you potentially could add a limit that says just for the 4-hire component. You know, that starts to get a little bit messier. But when we looked at the grand scheme of things, if we added this in there, the stabilization of that fishery comes about a little bit quicker, and then we can look down the road, hey, do we want to do a 4-hire limit that helps work within their business models, or do we just want to go back to the 10 and let people sort it out for themselves? My goal is a resource goal. We need to stabilize the fishery no matter who's taking those fish, whether it's a private angler or a 4-hire angler. It doesn't make any difference to me. A fish that's removed from the system is a fish that's gone. So we did receive a lot of positive feedback from the general public for a reduction in bag limit. And people that fish pretty heavy for speckled trout.
Did you hear from my wife? Because she's sure that gets me back to the house faster. So,
faster.
I mean, was she part of the public comment period on this?
Well, the public comment is really more towards that no matter what the limit is, people feel like that's what I'm headed for.
Sure.
So if it's 5 fish, when I get to 5, I'm good. If it's 10 fish, I feel like I have to get to 10 fish. and it was kind of an interesting.
There's truth to that. There's real truth to that.
There is. And the public, they're the ones that said it to me. They said, well, whatever the limit is what you're going to strive for. And most people are happy at a 5 or 6 fish limit. There were some discussions between 5 and 8, but we went with 6 as a fairly middle of the road. And again, we have the flexibility, and my promise to the public is that we're gonna look really hard at this in 3 years, but I'm gonna look at it every year.
Well, you don't have to worry about me getting my limit, whether it's 4, 6, or 10 on speckled trout. I've been offshore fishing for all my life, and now I've got an inshore bay boat, and I'm learning how to speckled trout fish. And I haven't caught a limit yet of speckled trout.
I failed you last year, so I'm going to try to make
yeah,
that
yeah, I
up
had Sean.
I know, and I couldn't even
a
do
ringer.
It for
him. I said, well, we're going to get a limit yep. today. I think we caught 2.
Yeah, I failed you, Mike.
So maybe it's Mike.
Yeah, it might
saying.
Be.
Hey, before we run out of time, I want to just remind folks the latest on Snapper. Let's talk about the season this year and now the Fed's green lighting the program here that's been successful.
I think Red Snapper is a success story. There are still some things I'd like to see us change, but state's going to manage full time the season in 2020 and beyond. We can adjust bag limits and size limits, but we're going to be really cautious about how we move forward in that. But this year, you're going to get long weekends in June and July. We're going to see how that goes. If the weather goes bad or the effort is down a little bit, we're going to add some weekends. We're going to fish to the maximum capacity. We're going to get to our 10% buffer, and we're going to manage this program as efficiently and effectively as possible for the anglers of South, the Southern United States, because we are the Red Snapper capital. People come here just for that.
And remind folks, too, that this is a – when you mentioned the weather occurrences and this and that, that and you said June and July and maybe forward, this is based on a formula here that we would reach by what? That there's an average weight per fish and there's an average effort, and that's how you total the numbers, right?
Absolutely. Our staff will be at the boat ramps and marinas to do surveys, so please don't dodge them. The data is so important that we develop an estimate of what the average size fish is, and that goes into our program. Snapper check is a vital portion of this. Real numbers count. Do not be afraid to put numbers in the system. It's mandatory. It's the law. It's a requirement before you leave the water that your fish are reported through Snapper check. But I promise you, the more real numbers we get in there, the more days you get, because at some point you're going to maximize the capacity of people to fish. I need the real data to make real decisions.
All right, there we go. Scott, I appreciate your time. We'll have to get you back really, really soon on the show, and maybe next month get a little further discussion before we get started with this 2019 snapper season.
Anytime. Thank you for the opportunity, guys.
As always,
thank
a pleasure.
You.
Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And we got to get out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way in next. Y'all have a great one.